Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go. Hour number two, live in L.A. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1. Derek Carr's brother, David Carr, NFL Network, joining us in 5 minutes. Lot of stuff going on in this world. You know, sometimes I get information, Joy, and you do too, and we have to be vague. Yesterday, I had to be vague on some stuff. And people on my social media, Colin, why are you being vague about stuff? Sometimes we all have to be vague. You have to be vague to your boss. You have to be vague to your wife. You have to be vague to your business partner. Sometimes you just have to be vague.
Yeah, is it? Is vague like? It's like it's not lying. It's like lying adjacent.
It's lying
it's
adjacent.
It's like lying's second cousin.
Like for an, I'll give you an example. Hasn't happened in a long time. But if I work at one of these big companies and somebody gets fired. And somebody goes, how come you won't tell me about it? And I'll go on social and say, because it's none of your business. That's for HR. That's none of your business.
Well, I think that's
why
vague.
People
I think that's just an answer.
Yeah.
But if you alluded to something, then
yes,
that's being vague.
Yeah. But I mean, like a lot of times I'm either it's none of your business, or there's strategy involved in a million different angles in the world. And
yeah,
we all, so sometimes I get information, I'm more vague about it.
This is chess, not checkers.
That's right. I'm not giving you all my moves. You get a couple dance moves now. You get them, you know, you unravel them, unveil them down the road.
But also, you don't have this urgent desire to be first with things.
I don't think it's so overrated.
Yeah.
I used to work for a news director. This is all the time. And it was in Portland. He was a big, gotta be first. And I was like, I'd rather be right. It's like I am working for a company with a bunch of journalists standing next to me.
Right.
Why can't I be second and right? So, I mean, by the way, I would prefer to be first, but like there's certain situations, especially controversial ones, I'll be last.
Yeah, I don't have any desire to be first, actually.
Yeah.
That's not the area of the business I tried to get into.
So Aaron Rodgers talked again yesterday, but I just want to throw this out. There's a saying in the NFL that once you start talking about retirement, it's right around the corner. I was told yesterday that Sean Payton... I was told by somebody who knows Sean really well. He started talking about retirement about a year ago. Threw it out there. In fact, Sean Payton said yesterday, you know, Mr. Benson says retirement's overrated. So he talked about it clearly with the owner. And then he retires, at least for the short term, coaching. So Aaron Rodgers, this piece of video is from August.
I felt going into the weekend before camp that I was 50-50. I don't care if people don't believe that. I mean, that's true. There were some things that got me to 50-50 for sure. And, you know, I spent a couple of days in silence and meditation and contemplation and really felt like that I should come back.
And now here's Aaron Rodgers talking about retirement in December.
I don't want to misinterpret what you said yesterday, but you sounded to me like a guy that you're definitely not going to retire after this season. You're going to play next year. It's a question of whether it's here or somewhere else. Is that also accurate?
Yeah, well, thanks for letting me clarify that. I wouldn't rule that out. You know, I think that I'm just enjoying this season for this season, playing next over the years, wanting to not be a bum Thursday on the way out and to still be able to play, I think is important to me.
I wouldn't rule it out. And then yesterday, he talked about retirement again. Quote, I don't fear retirement. I felt that during the off season. There's not any fear around it. The uncertainty is not unsettling at all. It's almost kind of exciting thinking about what life is going to look like moving forward. Three times since August. This is what's interesting. I don't think he's going to retire, but I have no insight. I think he's too good. I think he has fun. I think he likes playing. But he likes us to know, and this is an Aaron thing, is I'm in control. I've got a very big, broad life with many interests, and I could retire at any point and be very happy. Brady's never had a problem saying, I like playing football way too much. I also think it's interesting that Favre and Rodgers, they've become the same guy. This is how it was with Favre at the end, talking about retirement, blah, blah, blah. But here's what to me is interesting. If Aaron didn't want to retire, but he wanted to play somewhere else, and you're a general manager, if you were the Denver Broncos, would you give up 4 first-round picks, 2 players for a guy that's 50-50? I don't think I would. Honestly. So, I mean, the thing about getting Aaron is he's got like 5 great years left, right? If you have a good O-line and protect him a little. But if a guy is 50-50, I'm not going all in on a guy that's 50-50. I got to be honest with you. I'm not sacrificing my future if you're not giving me my future. That's not attractive to me. Like, if the Pittsburgh Steelers are not a desperate franchise. Denver may be a little more desperate because of the quarterbacks in their division. But I don't think Pittsburgh's desperate. I could see Pittsburgh having a discussion and Tomlin and the Rooney family going, we had enough drama with Ben. And no thanks. I'm not giving up 5 first-round picks. So it's just, to me, this is another reason why Aaron's not leaving Green Bay. I think he's getting less attractive. When you watch this weekend and watch Burrow and Stafford and Mahomes and Allen, and you hear the drama and the retirement, I don't think every GM in the NFL is as desperate as they were with Aaron. I really don't. Now, there's going to be always interest in guys who can play at that level. But man, I'm going to tell you, folks, if you're forcing me as a general manager or an owner or a coach to give up 4 first-round picks, a starting corner, and you're not all in on it, I want some guarantees too. You got to give me some guarantees, don't you? A little? Again, don't think he's retiring. But he likes us to know that he could, and he'd be very happy and doesn't need any of us or football. With that, David Carr stops by his brother, Derek, quarterback. But I watched David as well as Derek, NFL Network, super smart guy. I'll get to Derek in a second. I don't want to put you on the hot seat. As you know, if you've ever watched this show, which America loves, I don't know if you've heard, I love your brother. Let's start with this. What do you make? It is weird. You talk retirement a bunch. I'm sitting there. Forget me, the consumer. Yep. I'm sitting there as a GM thinking, brother, I ain't giving up 4 first rounds for a guy that's on the fence.
I get it.
It is something, isn't it?
Oh, very much something. And I think what it is at this point in any quarterback's career, as you get towards the end, especially guys that have as much success as Aaron has had, you get to the point where you want a chance to win a Super Bowl. Now, they've gone 3 straight years where they've won 13 games, and they have nothing to show for it. They have a frustrated quarterback and basically a frustrated fan base with that quarterback. You saw him when he was leaving the field at Lambeau the other day. He kind of just did the little wave, see you guys maybe later, maybe I won't. And they didn't care. I've talked to Packer fans that work in our studio at the NFL Network that have been long-time Packer fans,
yeah,
and they're fine with it. You know, I've talked about the different scenarios, what might happen. So you do have a great point, because you got to make sure Aaron is all in. And how you do that is you got to be Super Bowl ready if you're one of those teams. So, like, there's not a lot of teams that fit that billing that are Super Bowl ready that just need Aaron Rodgers to get over the hump. And then, man, that's a whole nother level, because now you're talking, like what you were talking about, is 4 first-round picks. I mean, think about that. That's your entire future. And what if Aaron decides that he wants to try Jeopardy again? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know? So that's a real concern for sure.
You know, it was interesting. I was very happy. And I love LeBron and Nick Saban and Brady, but I get the fatigue. I was really happy for Matt Stafford, because I've always believed this. With very few exceptions, maybe I think Aaron Donald would be great anywhere. You know, I think Trent Williams, he was great in Washington, and he's great in San Francisco.
Right.
Most of us, myself included, certainly, we're as good as our environment, the culture we're around, our bosses, our marketing. And I looked at Matt Stafford, and I was like, good for you, dude. And I got to tell you, David, I loved the last drive. It was a circus. The boat's taken in water. People are snapping the ball. And he made 2 huge throws. I loved that. And just take me. Take me to what you.
Well, isn't that the? Isn't that what we've always loved about Matt? Though, you know, how many Lions games do you really sit down and watch in the last couple of years? You know, but you'll watch it if they're close at the end because you know Matt's going to do something heroic. I mean, I remember when he got his ribs knocked out. You know, and he's still in there battling. It was the same scenario. I saw a clip on a social media platform where there was a Lions fan dressed in a Matt Stafford jersey, going absolutely nuts in his living room for this guy. So I think people appreciate. The fight that he has, the passion that he plays with. We know he's extremely talented. I think everybody's just happy that he's getting a chance to really play in a game that matters. And he is loving every minute of it. The chaos that you talk about when he's running down, trying to get everybody lined up to make sure they get this clock, the ball spiked so they can go ahead and win this football game. Loved every second of it. I've always been a huge Matt Stafford fan. I think if you just watch him play, he's great against pressure. In all the moments that you want a quarterback to be great in, he's great. And I think that that's why the Rams went out and did what they did, because they saw a guy that can take them to the next level. And here you are. You're right at the doorstep of playing in a Super Bowl in your own home stadium. It's because of number nine.
So we talked about this yesterday. And I've always been a Derek fan, your brother Derek Carr. And I've said this before. To me, he's been the life preserver of a chaotic mess for about the last 7 years. So when I hear criticism, I'm like, I think you guys got the... You're pointing the finger in the wrong direction. I thought he had a great year, and he wants Rich Bisaccia to be the coach. I totally get that. But I also worry, David, there's been a lot of interim guys that have worked, some that haven't, some like Wayne Fonts that have been good, not great. Mike Tice, Minnesota, they've been fine. So there is no absolute here. But Derek is so emotional, and he was in so many emotional games late. I do worry about falling in love with the proximity of the current coach. And what if there's somebody out there? I don't know if you've talked to him about this. What is best for your brother? What would you do if you own the Raiders?
Man, that's complicated. That's a great question, because when you look at it, and this is kind of, it's similar to what Aaron's going through. Although Derek's in a completely different world. He played in his first playoff game. There is a sense as a veteran quarterback and Derek, and talking to him, man, he went through an emotional roller coaster. They did about as good as you could do this year with what they were given, and they made it work. They're not that far away if you could add a couple pieces. We all know one of his best friends is Devontae Adams, and he possibly could not be franchise tagged, and we could see what happens there. But honestly, and this is not coming from Derek, this is coming from a NFL Network analyst, a guy that jumps on Colin's show and talks about football, talks about it with his friends. There has to be a commitment from the organization that they're going to give him what he needs to succeed. He only wants to win a Super Bowl. He's not here for the money. He's talked about hanging it up when John retired. And all of that stuff is, I want to win. That's it. At the end of the day, I want to win football games. He'd love to do it in Las Vegas, but he wants a chance to do it. He knows that there are pieces that you can put in place here. They're as close as they've ever been. They're right on the cusp. They got in the playoffs. They played against a team that's in the AFC Championship. In their stadium, battled down to the wire. They're right there. They need some pieces. They need to see from the Raiders that there's commitment there. We talk about it a lot with the Raiders. We talk about commitment to excellence. Al Davis preached it. That needs to happen because I can't guarantee that Derek is going to want to sign up for that if it's going to be the same thing that he's done over the last 7 or 8 years. I can't guarantee that. Knowing my brother. Now, he hasn't said anything to me. I just have conversations openly, talk candidly about it, about their situation, about who they could bring in. And it's not that I see him at a point where he doesn't believe that they'll do it. He just really wants to see who the new GM is going to be. Why he picks Rich, why he likes Rich is because he knows who Rich is. Yeah. Rich and him have great conversations, and he likes the fact that he was with him through all that chaos, through the nonsense of that last year, and they were able to do something productive. So you can take Rich and let him be the figurehead. You can keep Gus, keep a lot of those guys you brought over from the Chargers. Think about a lot of the free agents they have. Casey Hayward ain't going to stay there if Gus Bradley's not there. There's a lot of guys that aren't going to stay there if Gus is not there. So that's a revamped defense. That's a whole new look. What happens on the offensive side? We know that they struggle a little bit on the right tackle, right guardish side. Alex Leatherwood moved from tackle to guard. A lot of things have to be fixed, right? So There's a lot of decisions that have to be made, and you know Mark Davis isn't the only one that has to make them.
You know, it's very thoughtful answer, David. We always knew quarterback mattered in this league.
Yeah,
but the best quarterback won every division, yep. In the NFC, every playoff team had an offensive coach. And you got to look at this sometimes and think, man, I was born a little early on this stuff, because it is
all the time.
And I look at this, but it is interesting. As I watched the Bills and the Chiefs and marveled at it, I thought, if Belichick and Sean McDermott can't stop anybody, is there an argument to be made? We don't want to become the CFL. And that we want to,
right.
You know, the NFL's done a very good job, David, you know this, of pivoting rules all the time. Do you feel it a little bit now, it's almost, it maybe needs to be tweaked a little more back the other way?
I completely see where you're coming from, because we all sat there, and when Josh Allen called tails and they lost the toss, we all knew what was going to happen. You know, you pretty much knew. Well, and Josh, even you look at him on the sideline, sitting on that warm bench. He knew. He's seen his face. He's just sitting back like, we can't stop him, you know? So, you know, you can say play better defense. You're playing against space aliens. These quarterbacks aren't real life. Like, these are two of the most impressive performances that we've ever seen in a playoff run. I mean, Josh Allen had 12 incomplete passes and 9 touchdowns in the playoffs, and he's at home. So, I mean, that's crazy to me. So when you say, yeah, you have to tweak it, you might. I mean, even Andy Reid. Even at least Andy Reid said, maybe Josh Allen should have got the ball. Maybe he should have got a chance there. Said that yesterday. So I think that we're at a point where the rules are so geared towards the offense. I mean, if you just breathe on the quarterback, we saw Brady lose his mind for Von Miller just barely glanced. I can show you a highlight reel of me getting whacked. I think I'm owed at least 1,000 penalty yards somewhere in my career. So it's a different game. It's offensive driven. Obviously that sells tickets. That's exciting. We loved what we saw the other day, but you know, as well as I do, they'll steer the ship back the other direction if they have to, and it might be getting close.
Yeah. What a pleasure to see you, David. You look fantastic. Continued success. Do I have anything here to pump? Hold on a second. Go to @dcar8. And this Sunday, they have a special 6-hour edition of NFL Game Day Morning, 9 a.m. Eastern on the NFL Network and our friends there. As always, you always answer our calls, and not everybody does. I have that effect on some people. Good seeing you, buddy.
All right, man. Take care.
I'll take care. I thought he gave a really honest answer on his brother. That was a great answer.
Very interesting.
Really interesting. Take care of him.
I mean, they should. I mean, Derek Carr deserves that at this point in his career.
Come on.
He was a soldier this year.
First of all, they were so good late in games. He made a throw against the Colts, Hunter Renfrow, that was a top 5 throw of the year. It was an incredible throw. And then the following week, he made a throw to I'm forgetting that it was off the left side, and to beat the Chargers. He made a it was an out pattern. It was literally a slice of bread window, and he made it. Who was it? Zay Jones, number 7. And it was like, okay, those are 5 guys in the world can make those throws. 5 guys. And I didn't know if Derek was one of them. And after the end of the season, I'm like, oh, no, he's one of them too. Make it 6. I mean, so take care of him. Okay? You got problems there. Right tackle, problem. Linebackers need better ones. Safety upgrade.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Sunday, the NFC Championship presented by Intuit TurboTax Live is on Fox, with a clash between division rivals as Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers take on Matthew Stafford and the Rams for a trip to Super Bowl 56. It all starts off at 6 Eastern, 3 Pacific, only on Fox and the Fox Sports app. Fox Bet Super 6 wants the nation to stack the cash again for the 49ers-Rams NFC Championship game on Fox. Last week, the jackpot reached over $325,000, and they want to make it even higher this week. Scan the QR code and enter the NFC Championship contest for your free chance to win, and invite your friends to play too, because the more people who enter, the bigger the jackpot gets.
Yeah, I think it's very close. It's a very close game because the Niners' defensive front is built to give the Rams offensive line issues.
And they always do.
And the crowd's going to be 55-45 Rams over the Niners. It's going to be fantastic. And, you know, it's when Sean McVay got Matt Stafford, one of the things he has talked about, sometimes privately, I'm told, but now publicly, is about the high emotional bandwidth of Matt Stafford. And we really saw it on display the other day. The whole freaking team was melting down. And Stafford had this emotional bandwidth and this discipline, and it's a real thing. It's interesting on – there's one or two things I think about in my career. Not to bore you, so I'll be real quick. One, don't get in the way of myself. I work hard. I'm a good person. I'm talented. Don't get in your own way. I think Aaron Rodgers sometimes gets in his own way. Brady doesn't. Secondly, is be optimistic. Because cynical, it's hard to be successful being cynical. Because life presents you with so many obstacles and problems. If you do not believe instantly you can solve them, you can talk yourself into a crappy effort, not putting in the time, a defeatist attitude. Very few cynical billionaires. So I think about these things all the time. And they all really come down to decision-making. And it's really interesting. James Harden came out yesterday, and James Harden said, I don't like Brooklyn much, and I'm not happy. And I've said this before. What makes LeBron James so great? Now, obviously, there are physical gifts that he has that are next level, a dimension many have not had. But I know LeBron, I would say close with two of his allies. They're people that I like a lot and have had lunch or dinner from time to time and really like them. And they're really, really smart, curious people. LeBron makes just better decisions. And he was in Cleveland and he said, okay, I'm gonna make a move. And he chose Pat Riley, Dwayne Wade, Eric Spoelstra, Mickey Arison, the owner. Like, that's a good decision. That's championship DNA. And then he's like, I don't like how I'm being viewed as a villain. I'm going to go solve that and rehab my image. He goes back to Cleveland and smartly, he's like, I don't want Andrew Wiggins. I want veterans. I'm going to rehab Kyrie's game and give me Kevin Love. That's really smart. A lot of people would have taken the young guy. He didn't. And he's like, okay, I rehab my image. I won. I mean, the second time he left Cleveland, they weren't even really upset. There was no burning of jerseys. And then the third time, LeBron's like, okay, I'm going to go to L.A. I don't like the roster, but this is where I got to do business. I got a young son that wants to play basketball. They got a great – L.A. is the place to be for all that stuff. For my family, I'm going to go move to L.A. His net worth has almost doubled in the time he's been in Los Angeles. He came here, he's worth about $400 million. LeBron's worth about $900 million now. And it could be more depending on what his company sells for. And they won a championship and he got AD there. So LeBron makes good decisions. Or in other words, he doesn't get in his own way. This is what confounds me with the Brooklyn Nets and why I've been I just don't buy it. It's too many things. So Kevin Durant chose Kenny Atkinson over Steve Kerr as a coach, a championship culture over a culture, Silicon Valley, no thanks, I'm moving to Brooklyn, and Kyrie over Steph. What the hell? I didn't like his decisions. I love his game. I didn't like James Harden's decisions. I'm not going to work out. I'm going to get heavy and force my way out of Houston. And then join Kyrie. Have you watched the league? And then Kyrie's decision was, I'm not going to get vaxxed. And everybody will be okay with it. Now we know they're not. And I'll only be available for half the games. Kyrie, KD, and Harden are brilliant basketball players. I mean, three of the top five or six offensive players in the game. They're absolutely brilliant players. I would love to have Harden or Kevin Durant and my friend. If I owned a franchise, those are two of the first five, six guys I'd want. They're great players. Kyrie, you can have him. But it's just important for anybody listening. It's something I obsess over all the time in my little world. Don't get in your own way. I think Kevin Durant and Aaron Rodgers, two all-time remarkable gifted athletes and smart guys, sometimes get in their own way. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Well, Aaron Rodgers has said that he takes accountability for being divisive due to his vaccine comments. And yesterday on the Pat McAfee show, he said that he thinks it has not only impacted his popularity, but the Packers as well. He said there's a lot of people tuning in, rooting against us for one reason and one reason only. and it's obviously my vaccination status.
Was he
so
upset?
So the Niners fans were only rooting against you because of your vaccination status?
I have a question. I didn't watch it, and that's no disrespect to Aaron or Pat. The Pat's great. Did he say it as he was angry, or did he just state it as is?
I mean, he's not really like an explosive guy. Everything he says is kind of in a matter-of-fact tone. Right. You know, he's not...
I do think some people root against him for that. I don't think the number's as big as he thinks, because I think most of America... I think we like to see the best quarterbacks win.
Well, I mean, it's hard for me to take any statement seriously that's an absolute.
Right, right.
One reason only is an absolute. Everyone is not rooting against you because of your vaccine.
By the way, there's arguments to be made. Some people are rooting for you. Joe Rogan, by the way, is the most popular podcast in America.
Yeah, so you have all the anti-vaxxers rooting for you.
Right.
So that removes the absolute.
And
Niners fans are rooting against you because they would like to win the game. So that's a whole chunk of people that could care less what your vaccination
status is. The Bears and Vikings may be rooting against you.
I don't like people who are addicted to the idea of being a victim.
It's getting that point.
There are real victims in the world that deserve our sympathy, that deserve our help, that deserve our attention. There are real issues in the world that we should be talking about. Aaron Rodgers, I don't know him personally, but he seems like he has a pretty great life.
I think he does, yes. I think it's a magnificent life with support and...
And if you don't want people rooting against you for your opinions, it's an easy solve. Keep your opinions to yourself.
That's right.
You have an absolute right to have an opinion. You have a right to share your opinion. And equally, people who hear your opinion are allowed to disagree with you and dislike you for that opinion.
So my wife has no social media for that exact reason. She goes, I have strong opinions. I'm going to tell my husband. She has no footprint on social media because she knows even if you're in the right, even if you have a good heart, half of social media is going to push back. So she says, I have opted to not be as connected, but I'm completely off it. Aaron has opted to have a weekly show, talk about retirement, poke the media. So of course a big chunk of people are going to be allies and enemies. That's the way the world works.
This is how it works. I don't understand when this became a thing where it's like, I have an opinion and you have to respect it. No, I don't, honey. I don't know who told you that. It was a lie. Circle back. Ask them why they set you up for failure. You don't have to respect my opinion.
I would argue there were some people rooting against him for the vaccine crap, which I don't care about.
For sure.
But I would argue there's also a huge audience of people that were rooting for him because of that. I absolutely believe that's
of
true.
Of course there is. There's going to be people that just want to watch him play at the next level because they enjoy watching the way that he plays football. There's people that don't like him for stuff from before. People are going to like you. People are going to dislike you. That's what it is, man. And if you're going to put yourself out there, then that's what comes with it.
Well, I think Green Bay host, I think Stafford Aaron Rodgers is more interesting than watching the Niners-Rams again, my opinion.
Yes.
Nothing against it. But if you gave me the ideal matchup, I think Stafford going to Green Bay and saying, okay, now, Aaron, I got a better culture. I got a better one. I loved that as a matchup. No, I mean, the Niners are going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be 24-23. It's going to go right down to the wire. It's going to be a great game. But I've seen that. I was looking forward to Stafford-Aaron was a fascinating matchup.
Absolutely. I had no rooting interest in this game. I do think it's a little ironic that it ended the way that it did. And then now there is going to be an avalanche of people who were rooting against you for that reason coming for you. But that's what it is. Like, yeah. There's a sort of mentality in the world now that's like, well, I have my opinion, and that's how I feel about it, and you've got to respect it. Like, no, I don't. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to respect it, and you don't have to respect my opinion. I respect that you have the opportunity to share your opinion, and you have the right to have an opinion, and people can disagree with you. And guess what? People are rooting against you maybe because they dislike the other team. There's that, too. So Rob Gronkowski is a free agent this offseason, and he was asked by TMZ Sports if he will return next season.
Like, way too soon, but, like, you got to give it some time. You got to rest. I would say to see how everything goes, you know, how everything plays out, how I feel. I mean, I just want to heal completely, see where my thoughts are from there then. But if I had an answer right now, it would be no, Mike. In 3 weeks, it may be yes.
Love Gronk. Well, he did mention that he'll take into consideration whether or not Brady returns, but that won't be the only factor in his decision. I'm sure it will play a major role.
He worked at Fox for a year. He is one of the best people I've ever met in pro sports.
Yeah, Gronk is great. I've known Gronk a really, really long time.
Totally 100% authentic.
Yes. Yes. You are always going to get
the exact truth.
All of Gronk and the very consistent guy.
Speaks well to his mom, his dad, his brothers. He's the most authentic guy you'll ever meet. And really, you know, he came out initially and everybody's like, ah, he's a little bit of a meathead. His comedic timing on television, he knows exactly what
he's
doing.
That was so long ago. Like, Gronk was a very, very young man when there was the whole, you know, him dancing and, like, you
remember
know,
the funny
wild.
Bite? One of the funniest bites he ever had was when he scored a touchdown or something, and he said, I didn't want Coach Belichick to be mad at me. he was, like, super mad. I was like, oh, my God, that's so endearing. That's a great quality.
Actually, I think Gronk was a good example of how flexible Belichick can actually be. Cause we think of him as this like rigid, hard line, you know, no movement kind of guy. And then Gronk is this huge personality and has been a huge personality his entire time in the league and, you know, the spike and all of that. Yeah. And Belichick made it work. It also is not surprising that him and Tom have such a great relationship because he is such an authentic guy, but he did retire once already. And you heard him talking about it in the clip that he wants to heal. Like it's,
we'll
you know, how healthy he feels is going to play a factor in that 11 seasons in the league and didn't play in 2019. So the Baseball Hall of Fame announced their inductees for the 2022 class yesterday.
No, interesting.
Once again, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens did not make the cut. So both players will no longer be included in the ballot. Roger Clemens put out a statement and said he's moved on from the Hall of Fame a long time ago. Like, you know, him and his family were happy for what he contributed. And obviously Barry Bonds was a big point of contention for not making the Hall of Fame, considering that he was a seven-time MVP. No one else has more than three. And, you know, we could go down the list of both of these guys' incredible careers. But you need 75% of the vote to get in. Bonds finished with 66% and Clemens with 65.2%. I've been talking about this with the Hall of Fame for years.
Yeah.
I have sort of the same opinion about the media. I hold true journalists at the highest level of respect, the same with doctors and teachers. And, you are the keepers of history, and it's your responsibility to tell the most unbiased truth and hold people accountable as journalists. This gatekeeping of the Baseball Hall of Fame is...
It's exhausting.
It's the most exhausting conversation in sports. Like, Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens absolutely deserve to be in the Hall of Fame. If they were mean to you and didn't give you an interview at one point in their career because they were superstars and you didn't like the way they treated you, you don't deserve to have a Baseball Hall of Fame vote.
I agree. Yeah.
It's just, this is a museum and an honor for the greatest that ever played the sport.
He's one of them.
He's absolutely one of them. Both of them are.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to include them because of the steroid era, don't include anyone from the steroid era.
Yeah.
The whole thing just gets erased.
All in or all out.
All in or all out. Yep. Because this picky choosy thing with the personalities, it's obvious. It's not a hall of character. If you want to do that, you got to take everybody out of the Hall of Fame and start over. Because there's certainly some people in there that would not be considered Hall of Famers based off of their character. It's just silly. And the thing that bothers me the most is with the media, you never want to be the story. And every time the Baseball Hall of Fame vote comes up,
we're talking
about the writers.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
I don't talk baseball much, so I'm going to talk 2 minutes of baseball here. Just 2 minutes, and then we'll get back to football. A lot of people think they know who's having an affair in their social circle. Oh, she's cheating on him, and he's cheating on her. You have no idea who's cheating. We see it all the time. Good people do bad things. And the opposite, of course, is true. Bad people can do nice things. You meet somebody and think, I thought she was a jerk. She was so sweet. You think you know, and you don't know. Baseball writers think they know who took steroids. Oh, they've got a complete list. It's at home with their baseball cards from the 60s. Oh, you have no idea. None. The media does this a lot. Scolds you. By the way, I am not a conservative, though I have many conservative friends, and they've been ripping and criticizing the cloth masks for 2 years. Truth is, CDC now admits all those awful conservatives were probably right. And they were mocked and lectured and preached to because the media, of course, knows better than we do. Sometimes, and like the rest of us, sometimes not. Barry Bonds wasn't the nicest guy. Who cares? Aaron Rodgers drives me nuts. Who cares? It's not about me. He's one of the seven greatest baseball players, maybe 10 of all time. It's a museum. Put him in. By the way, there's an argument to be made. He was a Hall of Famer before the year 2000 when it's suspected he started taking. I'd like to ask a question to all you writers. If you know Barry took it, and I assume he did, do you think he never faced a pitcher on the juice? Oh, I remember when I was scolded by all the baseball seamheads when I suggested Eric Gagne could not go from a number four starter to the greatest reliever ever in a decade. I knew it because I had a source inside the Dodger clubhouse, arguably the craziest source I've ever had. You think you know, and you don't know. Somebody in your social circle is having an affair. Cross your fingers it's not your wife. She's attractive and smart. She's probably could do better than you. Stop preaching. Stop lecturing. He's great. It's a museum. It's an arbitrary list of know-it-alls who have really no idea. Roger Clemens drove me nuts. I don't think he's always been the best ambassador of the sport, but he's one of the 20 greatest pitchers of all time. He's in. Mark McGwire's in. Barry Bonds is in. Because they were all facing batters and pitchers that were on the juice, too. The Mitchell Report is absolute nonsense because it basically talked to the Mets clubhouse and the Yankees clubhouse and a handful of small Northeast regional teams. They didn't interview Midwest trainers and West Coast trainers. And even the Mitchell Report was an eye roll. You don't know who's having an affair, and you don't know who is on the juice. Quit pretending you have all the answers. Back in a second.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
He's Mike Carmen. I'm Dan Beyer. We have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Beyer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, show's flying by. 9 NFL head coaching openings now that Sean Payton has left the Saints. I think that's hysterically funny. I'm not happy people got fired. 9. Almost 30% of the league needs a new coach. We were at 3 5 weeks ago. It's barnyard musical. Cats and dogs living together. Fur flying everywhere. Coach fired, retired. By the way, and Sean Payton left, so he's the 9th coach, and he left for the 9th different reason. They've all left for a different reason. Some were just over their heads. Some were fired by crazy owners. Some said bad things on emails. Some just got burned out. Some didn't evolve. Some were trending wrong. I mean, it's crazy. 9 different reasons. I will tell you this. Nick Wright said this earlier, and I thought about this last night, and I did not talk to him. Defensive coaches do not have an understanding or relationships with offensive guys like offensive guys do. And so Pete Carroll, Mike Tomlin, and Ron Rivera, these are great defensive coaches. Great coaches have whiffed on multiple offensive coordinators. Guys that aren't legends as defensive coaches, but I think they're really, really good. Vic Fangio whiffed on 2 in Denver. Mike Zimmer inherited Kevin Stefanski. When he left, he hired another. I don't think it hit. And then Brian Flores went through 3. And they're all very good defensive coaches, not legends like Pete Tomlin or Ron Rivera got to a Super Bowl. So it's Sean McVay, never missed. Andy Reid, never missed. So I would hire offense. Sean McDermott's a defensive coach, and he's really smart. He's the best young defensive coach in football. The best coach defensively in football is Belichick. Sean's the best young coach. He works with people better than Brian Flores does. I think they're both great, but Sean has an ability to get along with the offense. He's going to lose Brian Daboll probably. You are not upgrading. That's as good a coordinator as you're going to get in the NFL. Like, that's it. He's calling the plays. Because McDermott's a defensive guy, Brian runs that offense. That's Brian and Josh's offense. You ain't doing better than that. The best candidate to replace him is a guy named Ken Dorsey, who is a Miami Hurricane quarterback. He has a great reputation. Dable knows it, and he wants to hire him. Okay? And Ken Dorsey, I may want to go to the offensive guy too. Or maybe I want to go to Josh Allen. We'll see. But this is what's interesting, is that as much as I like Sean McDermott, Mike Tomlin misses on OCs a lot. Pete Carroll misses. Rivera misses. Vic Fangio, Mike Zimmer. These are bright, really capable guys. And Rick Spielman, the GM of the Vikings, talked about this yesterday on the show.
That head coach has to have a relationship with that quarterback. And can a defensive head coach connect with that quarterback? Now, you know, an offensive coach is probably going to be able to because that's his job. But can a defensive coach do the same thing? The last two defensive coaches that faced off in the Super Bowl were Bill Belichick and Dan Quinn. But since then, every head coach that has won a Super Bowl, take out Belichick and Brady, has been an offensive coach with an excellent quarterback.
Yeah. I'm not saying Buffalo is going to fall off a cliff, but it's something to monitor if Brian Daboll leaves. Hour 3 in LA, next.